is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we are jumping on to talk some NBA. Jay, why don't you go ahead and lead us through? I think we're going to start out by talking Cavs, right?
Yeah, so the Cavs are kind of a dysfunctional mess. They're not playing very well. The rumors spreading that Beeline, that the players aren't happy with the way Beeline is treating them. He's treating them too much like college players, which was obviously the big concern people thought. Well, you know, and I think the winning kind of quieted all that at the beginning of the season, but obviously they are not currently playing very well. I think, if I remember correctly, they've lost 7 in a row, and I think they've lost like 12 out of the last 13 or something like that. And I was at the last game they won. Maybe I should just go to all the games, Mike. That was like 3 weeks ago. I was at the game and they won, and that was the last time they won.
Well, it's funny. I think we look back at the podcasts that we've done so far during the NBA season, and at least the first two that we did, we were heaping praise onto Beeline and the Cavs, just saying that it seems like he's bought in, seems like he's adjusted, despite the fact that college guys typically don't have, you know, that great of success when they transition over to the pro game. You know, it seems like Beeline's going to buck that trend, and man, he's really got it together. And then boom, all of a sudden, you know, you start losing and things start coming out. It's kind of strange because it's not being pegged to any particular player, so it's all unnamed sources. I saw, read something today that Tristan Thompson came out in favor of Beeline, which, why wouldn't he? Tristan said something like, you know, to the point that Beeline's let him expand his game and try to do some other things, which clearly he has. Tristan's done more things, especially offensively, than he's ever done in his career. And I don't know, you don't know what to believe. I mean, the bottom line is losing makes everything much more difficult, and winning tends to smooth over a lot of those rough edges. With it being all unnamed sources, and you say, okay, it's coming from veteran guys. I mean, who are the veteran guys on this team that would be complaining if it's not Tristan?
I mean, you have to be loved, who's, right?
Right. I mean, who else on this roster really would qualify as...
I think Jordan Clarkson's an example of possibly one that would be complaining.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, I don't know. I just don't get... I don't know. It doesn't make any... I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, is Matthew Dellavedova complaining?
He doesn't seem like
is
the
Brandon
kind of guy
Knight
that would complaining?
Complain. Is Larry Nance complaining? I mean,
well, Larry
I, we
Nance
just don't have...
Larry Nance came out yesterday and said that he's never had a problem with his coaches and he likes Beeline and what Beeline's trying to do here. So I don't...
It just doesn't... I mean, if it's not Tristan, it's Kevin Love. And that doesn't seem like Kevin Love's MO, that he would go behind the scenes and be complaining about it. So I guess maybe Clarkson. I don't know. I mean, there's no veterans on this team. I mean,
Ante Zizic, man. Come on.
But even Zizic, what's he like? He's third or fourth. I don't know. To me, it's all, I don't know. I just don't put too much stock in whatever's going on. I mean, I think the bottom line is they're bad, and the fast start where they were, whatever they were, 4-5, or, it seemed like maybe they were going to be able to hang around the fringes of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, or maybe, stay within 5 or 10 games of 500. Those dreams have obviously been completely dashed, and they're just not playing well. And the more and more I watch Darius Garland, I'm not sure that Darius Garland was a quality pick there.
He had a nice outfit
at number 5. Yeah, the Jesus robe. I'm not sure that Darius Garland was a solid pick at number 5.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, they're clearly going to trade Kevin Love, and they're clearly going to try to trade Tristan, and hopefully whatever they trade for those two guys will bring back something that will be a benefit to the team down the road. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Porter maybe is your guy. I mean, he
looks like
more,
the bright spot right now. He
does.
The only thing.
He's getting more and more minutes. I mean, we talked about it before. Like, I think Chetty Osman's been a disappointment, and Nance and Clarkson, they kind of are what they are. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this team. They're not going anywhere with what they have, and I don't know that any young player they have on the roster is somebody that you're really going to want to build around long term for a team that's going to be a real factor in the playoffs. So,
all right, it's time for everybody's favorite game. Guess the next Cavs victory. So I'm gonna say a game. I'm going to say whether we think, and then we can say whether we think they could have any chance of winning that game. All right,
I'm ready.
We're going to figure out when they could win next. Tomorrow night, they play home versus the Rockets.
That's a loss.
How many points is Harden going to score tomorrow night, Mike?
All right, well, did you listen to the Zach Lowe?
I have not listened to Zach Lowe yet. I just finished the Daryl Morey Book of Basketball podcast, though.
Okay, so you're a little bit behind, but – it wasn't his podcast. He was a guest on like the ESPN Daily Show or something. They were talking to him about Harden and defense. I guess like a week or so ago, Denver started running double teams at him the moment he started bringing the ball up the court. So they would just meet him at half court with two guys. And since
it didn't
then,
work
now,
out well for Denver though. I'm pretty sure they lost that game.
Yeah. And then Atlanta tried it and he scored. That was when he scored 60 and 31 minutes, but Dallas did it to him and somebody else. So basically saying, they were asking Zach whether or not, is this a viable strategy where, you're just running two guys and making the rest of those guys play 4-on-3. And he was saying, it's just people have run out of ideas of how to play him, somewhat conventionally. And we talked last year about the Jazz playing behind him and forcing him into the middle to funnel him towards Gobert. And as much as I dislike the guy and as much as I do think that he hasn't come up big in big moments, I mean, he's just putting up ridiculous. He's putting up ridiculous stat lines, and the sheer volume of threes that he's taking and the amount of points that he's scoring is getting ridiculous. And he's just so good at drawing fouls, and people don't necessarily want to see that or appreciate it, but it's a skill. Like being
it's
able
efficiency,
to,
man.
Being able to draw fouls is a skill, and it's something that he's probably the best ever at being able to draw fouls. So I don't know what you do with the guy except maybe get him into a playoff game, and that's how you slow him down.
We agree that that's a loss. Okay,
that's a loss. That's
so
a
then
loss.
Thursday, back to back, we're playing at San Antonio.
Ooh, that's a loss.
That's a loss. Okay, then on Saturday, they're at the Bucks.
I believe that's a loss.
That's a loss. Then Monday, the 16th, they're at the Raptors.
That's a loss.
Okay, so we're getting close to Christmas here. I don't know if there's going to be any presents here. Wednesday, the 18th, they are home versus the Hornets.
Hornets have been playing surprisingly well. I'm going to say that's a loss.
That's a loss. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's a loss. The Grizzlies on the 20th. I think that's our chance, Mike.
I think either of those next two games. So you have Memphis on the 20th, and then you have the Hawks on the 23rd. I think they get one of those two.
Okay, so because then they once again are back at it with the Celtics, the Timberwolves, the Raptors. Then they're at the Hornets, or then they have the Hornets again. So I definitely think if we're going to win before the new year, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. If we're going to win before the new year, I think it has to be in that three-game stretch of the Hornets, Grizzlies, Hawks.
Yes, I agree. I don't see us getting any game outside of those, especially because some of those other games that, you know, theoretically Minnesota might be winnable if that's a home game, but they're away at Minnesota.
Andrew Wiggins is going to score like 35 because he always puts up his best.
Wiggins always puts up big numbers. Yeah, if he could only play against the Cavs, he would have lived up to his potential.
Yep. So that's not looking good for the Cavs. And like I said, this is kind of we didn't want them to make the playoffs and we didn't want them to win. But when I saw it at the beginning of the season, I was kind of excited and, you know, it looked like promising. But now
You'd like to see them play functional basketball, and it just doesn't feel like they're playing functional basketball.
Ever since that 76ers game when they lost it at the buzzer, I feel like they've kind of just played like poop. Now I know they beat Portland since then, but
the other thing is that
transitional phase.
Yeah, but the other thing is you'd like to. I don't know. I would like to see the guys that theoretically can be part of your core when you're good playing really well, and I just don't see it. Like Garland's now leading the team in assists. Do you know where he's at? How many he's averaging now?
Probably like 2.3 or something like that.
2.8.
Oh, I was close.
You know, 2.8. It's just, I don't know.
And the other thing, what's going on with Dylan Windler? Like, how the heck has he not played a minute yet? That's ridiculous.
He got assigned to the Canton Charge.
Oh,
I don't know if
that.
Yeah, he got assigned to the Canton Charge this week. I don't know if he played a game for them or not. I'm not sure. I don't know if he went down there and played, but I know he got whatever the term is for being sent down to the Canton Charge. I don't know. This team, I don't know. There's not really anything to get excited about. Sexton's been fine, but I'm still not convinced that of what he is on a winning team. Garland, like I said, I have not been impressed. I've not seen anything from him that makes me think that he's going to be an above average NBA player. I mean, I haven't seen anything. I mean, not his shooting, not his ball handling, not his ability to pass. His defense is terrible. And I know we're only, 25 games into his first season, but you got to see. I mean, I just don't see anything. I just don't know what he's good at.
Yep. He's good.
Chetty's been bad since he signed his contract.
Yeah.
I don't know. This team, we need to get some new blood in here. Let trade December 15th can't get here fast enough.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right. We're going to move on to the team on the opposite side of the spectrum in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, the Milwaukee Bucks have won 15 in a row. And what I find very interesting is the Milwaukee Bucks have only lost one game since Halloween. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. And I think we'll talk in a minute here about their upcoming. So we're going to do the opposite with them. Guess when they're going to lose next. With Kaz, we did guess when they're going to win next. We're going to do guess when the Milwaukee's going to lose next. Because I think they have a good chance of going a little bit, definitely going a little bit further. But they're just playing so well. And obviously this is all because of Giannis. He's just playing out of his mind, and I think he will continue to do so, and he's well on his way to probably repeating as MVP. And I think Milwaukee is definitely going to be a force to reckon with in the East for the whole season and probably throughout the playoffs.
Milwaukee is just getting really good performances from their other players. Bledsoe, just like he was good in the regular season, he continues to be very, very good this year in the regular season. He's bounced back from the playoff disappointment. Again, I don't know how much stock you can put in what he's going to do come playoff time, but he's playing well. Middleton's come back in the last three, four games and sort of picked up right where you'd expect him to. He's been shooting the ball well and providing that secondary guy that can kind of create off of Giannis. Brooke Lopez continues to play very, very well, both offensively and defensively. I know I saw something, read his stats about he's one of the toughest guys to score against in the lane. The shooting percentages against him when he's nearby is, you know, very, very low. So they're getting good performances from their secondary unit. I'm just not sure, like I've said before, the thing that worries me with them is what do they do in the playoffs when somebody's got time in between games to really break down and figure out, all right, how do we slow down Giannis? How do we slow them down, make them play more half-court basketball? And that was the formula Toronto used to beat them last year. You put up that wall in front of Giannis. He's got to figure it out, make the passes, and then these other guys got to be able to, they got to be able to knock down shots. And I think Giannis is better this year. So, you know, again, I picked him to get to the finals. I still think that the regular season is what it is, but I think when push comes to shove, I think they're better than anybody in the East, and they're going to be right there to win the title when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think they're definitely better than anyone in the East, although I will say I am still continuing to be impressed by Boston, and I think Boston, Milwaukee could be interesting, and I'm still blown away by the fact that Boston's playing as well as they're playing, because I just didn't see it coming.
But no, and Gordon Hayward's, you know, out. Obviously, he was playing well. Yeah, I mean, was playing well before he got hurt, but he's going to be back relatively soon, and you add him back in, and it just seems like they've regelled, for lack of a better way of saying it. Replacing Kyrie with Kemba seems to have, you know, fit everybody nicely, where now you've eliminated the prickly situation that they had last year in the locker room, and it just seems like everybody's kind of slotting in and finding their place, and they're playing well. I know we talked before we jumped on that I think right now in the Eastern Conference, if you look at the way the playoffs picture the seeds 1 through 8 shake out right now, I would not be at all surprised if it ends up, for sure it's going to be these 8 teams. It's just a matter of how they end up finishing in what order.
I'm willing to go on record now, Mike, that Milwaukee's going to be the number one seed.
Yes, I feel pretty confident, barring a Giannis injury, that Milwaukee's going to be the number one seed. And, you know, then the Boston, Miami, Philadelphia group, I think that could play out a bunch of different ways. I still think by the end of the season, Philly ends up in that two spot. And then Miami and Boston, to me, are a toss-up. I think the Raptors have kind of established themselves probably as the fifth seed, and then
I would not. By the way, I would not want to be Milwaukee and have to play them in the second round.
The second round?
What'd you say?
Have to play who in the second round?
I wouldn't want to play Toronto in the second round. I know that they don't have Kawhi. I just wouldn't want to do it. That's a tough out. That's a tough out.
I still don't think, as good as Siakam's been, I don't know. I wouldn't be that worried about Siakam as my go-to score, you know, the guy I have to shut down on another team in order to beat him. If I was gonna play any of those teams at the top, so if I'm the Bucks and I'm looking at my second round opponent, and you ask me would I rather play Boston, Miami, Philly, or Toronto, I think I'd rather play Toronto than any of those other teams.
All right,
just me, but.
Okay.
Because right, I don't think Siakam is quite at the level of the best player on each of those other teams.
Okay. All right. So you want to play? When are the Bucks going to lose next?
Sure.
Okay. Tomorrow they play the Pelicans. That's a win.
I believe that's a win. Yes.
Your boy Zion's resumed basketball activities. That's good news, right?
I don't know what that means, but all right.
Yeah, that's what they said. Nice. All right, then Friday they're at the Grizzlies.
I believe that's a win.
We already established that Saturday against the Cavs is a win.
That's a
All right, so I think the next two games are the only two games standing between them running through Christmas here. Okay, Monday, they're home against the Mavericks.
I mean, that's a win because it's at home.
Okay. The game that I am going to be definitely tuning into next Thursday night, the Lakers are in town.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun game because
that's a
the
TNT
Lakers,
game too.
Lakers are 21-3 right now,
and Milwaukee's 21-3.
So the question is, can both of those teams get to? Can both teams get to that game without losing? So then can they both come in there with only three losses? So I'm pulling up the Lakers schedule right here. So the Lakers have Orlando. They're at Orlando. That's a win. At Miami.
Ooh,
that could be a tough game.
Yeah.
At Atlanta, that's a win. At Indiana. Indiana's always a tough place
Although
to play.
Atlanta, Dwight Howard has had some issues in Atlanta before, so I don't know. There might be some issues there.
Maybe you just leave Dwight in L.A. I don't think you really need him to beat the Hawks. And then they're at Indiana before they play the Bucks. So they have two, I think, pretty clear wins and then two potential games that could be tough.
So you're saying
that
the Lakers only have four games until they play them?
The Lakers play the 11th, the 13th, the 15th, the 17th.
It's four for them too. Sorry.
They're playing every other day, basically. Yep. The Lakers are playing every other day. So that'll
be an interesting one. I think that's the Mavericks and the Lakers are the two games. Because the next game's the Knicks, that's a win, and the game after that is Indiana, that's probably a win for Milwaukee. So then you get to Christmas Day. So I think of the through Christmas Day, I think the two teams that have the best chance of beating them are the Mavericks and the Lakers. And I think I'm going to go on the record. I think the Lakers are going to beat them.
All right, I disagree. I think the Bucks beat the Lakers because it's a home game. I think that's a Giannis national TV statement game. And
Giannis in that game? LeBron or Anthony Davis?
Anthony Davis.
Okay. So Anthony Davis, let me ask you a question. Who's Giannis guarding?
I would say Giannis probably starts on Davis.
And then Brooke Lopez is guarding LeBron? No, Brooke Lopez is guarding JaVale McGee. Who's guarding LeBron then?
Then Middleton's on LeBron.
Oh, good luck with that one. We've seen that rodeo before.
Well, That's fine. Look, these are the two teams I had in the finals. I think there's a lot of interesting potential matchups and different ways that the teams can play. I'm just telling you, I think Milwaukee's going to win that game strictly because it's a home game. I think Milwaukee's next loss are – Man, let's look ahead at their schedule. So let's say they beat the Lakers.
Well, they got to get there first, Mike.
All right, but I'm just saying. Let's say they beat Dallas and the Lakers. Now you have at Philly on Christmas Day. Tough game, right?
Yeah.
Could lose that game, but then look what happens next.
Hawks, Magic, Bulls, Timberwolves.
Back-to-back Spurs, Golden State, Sacramento, Portland, New York. They could win. I mean, those are all wins. I mean, I guess you could lose at San Antonio, maybe.
I think you could lose at Portland. Portland's playing.
Yeah,
much
you're on a four game West Coast trip, so you got to go San Antonio, Golden State, Sacramento, Portland. So you're on the road, and we know that teams lose when games that occasionally they shouldn't just because of the scheduling. But Milwaukee's good. The question is, how many games do you think they're going to win? Can they win? Are they going to win 65 games?
I mean, I think they have a shot. They have a shot to go between 65 and 68, which I wouldn't have said at the beginning of the season.
I agree. They're on pace now.
We thought there were. How many teams did we think there were going to be about 60 wins? Did we say? I said, the Lakers probably had a chance. I thought the Clippers had a chance. I thought Milwaukee had a chance, and I thought 76ers have a chance. I'm not willing to bet that the 76ers have a chance at 60 wins just because of how the team's structured. I just don't think that's going to happen anymore. So
yeah,
I still think the Lakers definitely have a good chance at 60. I mean, LeBron's played every game. Here we go again with this whole thing.
He's amazing.
Well, the thing is, too, you can't underestimate the fact that he only played 55 games last year. Like, that's That's got to be huge. He didn't have the grueling playoffs, and his body probably does feel like so refreshed in comparison to what he was dealing with.
Comparatively to what he's before, I agree. All right, so a little quiz for you. Who is shooting better from the line, Giannis or LeBron?
Well, I mean, I'd have to guess Giannis is shooting more free throws, so, and probably getting beat up more, and so LeBron's probably shooting better. That would be my guess.
All right, LeBron is shooting a robust 70.5%.
What's his career shooting? Does it say?
I don't have his career.
I'll see if I can figure that out.
I don't have his career. It's probably a little higher than that, but not much. So LeBron's getting to the line 5.4 times per game. Giannis, on the other hand, is getting to the line 10.8 free throws per game, but he's only shooting this year 58% at the line.
Oof, it's not even close.
No, that's bad. I mean, that is, I mean, I always thought that one of LeBron's Achilles heels was that he's not the Kobe Bryant, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, even Magic.
He's 73.6% for his career, Mike.
Yeah, that sounds about right. You know, so LeBron was far from automatic at the line in big moments, and I always felt like that was something that kind of held him back, and LeBron never approached where Giannis is this year. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on as we go forward here, that, you know, especially in the playoffs. I mean, if he's only shooting 58% from the line, I mean, at some point, rather than giving this guy dunks, I mean, people are just going to start wrapping him up and grabbing him and making him go to the line in the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see. These right now are clearly the two best teams, or they've been playing the best. But I also don't think that either one of them, I don't think anybody's looking at these teams from below in the standings and saying, oh, there's no way we can beat Milwaukee, or oh, there's no way we can beat the Lakers. You know, as well as they're both been playing, and as much as they might be the favorites, I don't think anybody's afraid of these teams.
Yep, I agree. All right, so we'll talk about one more Eastern Conference thing before we move to one thing that I've written down for the West, and I'm sure you have some more. But Fizdale getting fired from the Knicks. I mean, I think the writing was on the wall. I don't think it was fair, again, for him. I feel bad for this guy because, I mean, what the heck is he supposed to do with seven power forwards on his roster, whatever he has? What is he supposed to do with the way that this was constructed? Obviously, the Knicks front office planned for Durant and Kyrie, or Durant and someone else to come, and then they struck out, and they got stuck with Morris, and I don't even know who else is on
the team. Well, they didn't get stuck with them. It's not like anybody put a gun to their head and said, hey, you got to take these guys.
Well, no, I know, but it's just, you can't blame Fizdale. That's just my opinion.
No, you can't blame Fizdale. I mean, I'm not sure that he did a very good job with what he had, but what did he have? He didn't have anything. So the best thing you can say if you're Fizdale is he's going to keep collecting checks for, I think, the remainder of this year and next year as well, too. So you can't feel too bad for him. But I don't know. At this point, who wants to go work for the Knicks? Like, there's all kinds of rumors now that they're trying to go after Masai Ujiri next summer. That's the guy Dolan wants. I mean, why?
And why would Masai want to do that?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Why would anybody want to go work for the New York Knicks? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
He goes from free healthcare in Canada to what we got going on here. I don't know about that either.
I mean, I guess you have the budget. You have the ability to spend money. You have the market where if you think you can do a good job that you could, but it just seems like to try to overcome the James Dolan factor, it seems like it's been proven over and over and over again that that is too much to overcome. And I mean, if you're the Knicks, if you're a Knicks fan, you just have to look and go, what are we doing? Like, what do we have? Like, what do they have that you're gonna build around? Mitchell Robinson's a decent player.
They have the worst record in the NBA, Mike. They're worse than the Warriors, I think.
They're not much worse. I mean, I think the Warriors, I believe, have 5 wins.
They're 5-20, and I think
right. So
I think
Cavs,
I think the Knicks are 5-20 tonight. They lost tonight, I think. So I think they're also 5-20 now.
All right, so you know the Knicks have 4 wins. Cavs have 5 wins.
Oh, the Knicks Warriors, only have 4 wins. Okay.
Unless they won tonight, which I don't think they played tonight. So But yeah, so I mean,
the Knicks are 19. Golden State's 5-20. Man, we're right there with the Knicks and the Golden State Warriors for the worst record.
Well, we're right where we were last year. We're right there in the mix of the bottom.
And New Orleans is 6-18. That's crazy to me.
You got to think though that New Orleans, if Zion comes back, that they're gonna climb their way out of contention for that spot.
Orleans has lost 9 in a row, man.
Oh, I know. I mean, they're bad. Don't get me wrong. They're really bad. But you got to think that if Zion comes back, he's going to at least elevate them above the Knicks, Cavs, and Warriors.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the Hawks are probably even a cut above where the Cavs, Knicks, and Warriors are. Especially John Collins should be coming off his 25-game PED suspension soon. Yeah, so, you know, they get John Collins back, and I would anticipate they're going to play better. Again, they're not going to contend for a playoff spot coming out of a 6-18 hole, but I think they're better than that Cavs, Knicks, Warriors group.
Just so you know, the Knicks are currently playing. They're playing Portland. Portland's beating them by 26 midway through the third quarter.
All right, so it seems safe to assume that they're going to remain stuck at 4 wins.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what they do. It was funny. I don't know about you, but when I saw that Mike Miller got,
I thought it was Mike Miller.
Everybody thought it was Mike Miller. Every article I've read is like, not that Mike Miller. So because when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, Mike Miller. I'm like,
ESPN's,
I didn't even know he was on the Knicks staff.
Opportunity, Mike. Tomorrow
Why is that?
Night they're airing the Pelicans Bucks game instead of airing the Knicks Warriors game that's going to be played tomorrow night. Now that would be a great game to watch.
Well, you got to catch that on a local broadcast.
League pass, baby. I might have to sign up.
That's it.
All right. So the only other thing I have written down is I wanted your take on the whole. You know, we didn't really talk about it because it hadn't happened yet. But the Harden dunk that the refs called didn't go in the hoop, but it clearly did go in the hoop, and they obviously lost the game in overtime, but it should have never even gone to overtime. And the Rockets protested the game, and Adam Silver today announced that he is denying their protest. And I actually felt like the Rockets had a valid point. I mean, I guess if this protest doesn't get like considered, I mean, we don't know how much consideration actually happened, but if this doesn't get something changed, or if they don't like replay the X amount of time, I don't know at this point what would.
Well, there's a couple things. One, I'm not familiar with the exact. Did they review that during the game?
No, you're not.
Was that a review?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. So that being said, that's what I thought. But as I was going back and looking at it today and trying to read and figure it out, I couldn't tell if there was any replay at all that had been done on the play. So when you watch the play, it's conceivable as you watch the play, especially if you're watching it live at full speed and you don't know that something was amiss. So obviously when we're looking at it now, we know that, you know, that it went in. So, but if you just look at it live at full speed, it's very, very easy to think that he dunked that ball and that it went off his head and came back out of the rim. I mean, you can totally see where if an official was watching that live and wasn't at the exact perfect angle, that ball came through so fast and so hard that it could have easily been construed as it hit him on the head and bounced back out, which is, I think, what they ruled. So that's number one. Where just the initial call, you can see where the initial call was made, why it was called the way it was. That's the first part of it. And the second part of it is, okay, you're going to protest that. And the Rockets claim that, well, we would have won because we would have had two more points and then the game doesn't go to overtime. All right, maybe. But that play occurred with 7 minutes and 50 seconds to go in the fourth quarter. So it's not like Harden threw that dunk down with 1.7 seconds to go and you didn't have any time to recalibrate and readjust what you needed to do in your game plan. So I'm with that. I'm with Adam Silver here. I would have denied the protest too.
Well, you know what they do, right? They would go back and play the last 7 minutes and 50 seconds.
Right, but they're not going to do that.
They did. Well, they. Well, I can only think of one time that they did that. Right, was something to do with Shaq, because Shaq was on one team and then he got traded and played on the other team in the same game or something. I feel like that was.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that, but yeah, I vaguely remember that, but I don't remember the exact details. But I just don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to replay. I mean, why would you do that in a meaningless meaningless regular season game? I don't know.
Well, Houston might argue at the end of the season, if they're one game out of the two seed, that it's not meaningless.
Hey man, make another basket in the last 8 minutes.
Okay, listen. I'm just counterpointing you. I just think that.
What's your real take on it? If you're the commissioner and Houston came to you with that protest, do you uphold the protest and make those two teams play the last 8 minutes again?
Sure, why not? Think about the money revenue that you could bring in. Put it on TV. Put the last 7.5 minutes of that game on TV.
Are you buying a ticket to that 8 minute game?
You let people in for free, and they just pay for their concessions.
By the time they cook the hot dogs, the game's over, man.
Or do you do it like they did the other time that they replayed it, and I'm sure San Antonio.
Maybe you go Ernie Banks, man. Let's play two.
I'm sure that the teams are meeting again. And this is what they did the last time. I think they had to play like the last 3 minutes of the game again.
Protest denied. End of story.
I'm just saying. I think
it's over, man. Come on, like, get over it. Get over yourselves, Houston. You lost. Score another basket in the last 8 minutes. Maybe give Harden some practice, taking some clutch shots. I don't know.
Speaking of which, did you see the video of Patrick Beverley pretending to shoot like James Harden?
I did see that.
Or by Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I did. I did see that.
That was hilarious. I laughed so hard.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was enjoyable.
Are there any other current NBA topics before we get into that other thing we wanted to talk about, Mike, that you want to touch on?
I don't think there's anything else that really is jumping out at me. I think we talked a little bit about the bottom of the West, and we've talked about it pretty much on every NBA pod we've done this year. But right now you got Oklahoma City and Phoenix at the 7-8. And then I think there's still four teams that are, quote, alive for one of those last spots. Sacramento, which has been holding it together without Fox and Bagley, and Bielitsa hit the 30-foot three to beat the Rockets last night. And then you got the T-Wolves, Spurs, and Blazers, who, you know, we've talked about the Spurs and Blazers last week. No, see, it took me, you and I talked about this. Every time I saw that name, I always want to call him Nemanja Bjelica. And then I kept hearing, like, I heard an announcer one time say Bielitsa. I'm like, who's this Bielitsa guy? And then I finally figured it out and put two and two together. So I guess that makes me an NBA expert now, that I can pronounce Bielitsa's name.
Yeah, but I'm interested to see what happens. And like we talked about earlier, it's definitely like the East seems like it's pretty set. The top eight, I wouldn't be surprised if this top eight is where it is. Maybe their seedings changed. Other than Milwaukee, but the West is definitely way more up for grabs, I think.
Yeah, I mean the top six teams are going to be in. Now, I think what's interesting out in the West is, I think, you know, Dallas is a Luka injury away from dropping out. Houston's obviously a Harden injury away from dropping out. Although Jokic has been bad, I think Denver, if Jokic were to go out, I think Denver would have the potential of kind of cratering a little bit. They're only 5-5 in their last 10 anyway. Utah, who knows what's going on with them? They just haven't figured it out. And Conley's been not as good as obviously they had hoped. But those teams would have to fall pretty far in order to completely fall out of the playoff picture. It's so interesting to me that Dallas is third. And just, again, how good Luka has been. It's probably going to take a historic Giannis season. I mean, if Luka keeps them playing at the pace that they're playing right now, I mean, he's going to finish number two in the MVP race, and he's going to get lots of votes if he keeps them playing at this pace.
Yep, I definitely agree.
Which I know we've talked about. All right, let's get to the midseason tournament and the post, the pre-playoff tournament stuff.
Yeah, so I'm interested. You know, obviously we've kind of talked about it here and there, like off the show, and I know Bill Simmons' take, and ever since I heard him say it for the first time, and I'm sure he said it other times a few years ago, I was like, you know, that would be really interesting. And now here we are, you know, where they're supposedly floating the idea of doing this to try and, I don't know if eliminate tanking is the word, or kind of spruce up the NBA a little bit and try to get do something to, because obviously there's big talks that the ratings are down this year, and I don't quite get why. Maybe there's just not a team everyone's rooting for, and obviously I think Zion's injury didn't help, and there's some other contributing factors that I think definitely have caused the NBA ratings to not be as good as.
I think the audience is just too fractured. The way TV and the internet is structured today, there's just too many things for people to be able to click on and watch. And now you can watch your favorite show anytime you want to watch your favorite show. How many of these games are appointment viewing where you're like, I got to see that game? So we talked about the Lakers-Bucks game. Yeah, maybe that's one that lots of people are going to tune in for. But I just think it's so easy to consume highlights. There's so much information out there to read about that. And I'll be honest, I spend more time reading about the NBA than I do watching games, in all honesty.
Until the playoffs, right? Until
the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, the playoffs, I mean, I watch, you know, I'll watch as many playoff games, as many minutes of playoff basketball as I can. But regular season basketball, it's hard. People are busy. There's other things to watch on TV that people are, you know, other things that people are doing. And I just think that has to contribute to the ratings. It'd be interesting to see if you could capture data on how many people are, after the Mavericks play, how many people are clicking on the YouTube video of all of Luka's highlights from their last game, those kinds of things. Like, that would be interesting data to capture. And I don't know if they're able to capture, and obviously that doesn't get reflected in the Nielsen ratings, but nonetheless, I think that there's lots of reasons to explain away why ratings are going down, and yet I still think that the NBA is as popular as it's ever been, and there's just so much star power in the league that I know the TV contracts are worrisome, but they're going to figure something out of how to capitalize on what's going on with streaming and all this stuff. They're gonna figure out a business model.
The NBA is really thrilled about their middle of the day game during Christmas Day, by the way, Mike. They gotta be thrilled. Rockets Warriors is their middle of the day game. Like,
yeah, it's rough.
Talk about I mean, obviously they couldn't predict all these injuries and stuff, but oof. That's going to be a brutal one. That's the time to
eat your family meal.
I was going to say, here's a little teaser for our podcast of the order we're going to rank the viewings of those. Like, how likely are we to review them? I don't like James Harden in the Rockets, and the Warriors are terrible. So the likelihood that I'm going to even watch a minute of that game is 0.00.
Yeah, I would say that it might, depending on where I am at that point in the holiday, will determine whether or not I want to talk to relatives or catch a brutal NBA game.
Listen. I just got to mentally prepare for the 8 o'clock game, because that's the game that matters, in my opinion. But we'll save that for another time. But
yeah, let's save that for another time.
The mid-season tournament, I think it's interesting. I don't know how it would exactly be structured, and there were some different like ways that it had been laid out and things. But I definitely think like having a mid-season tournament and having some sort of carrot at the end of that, you know, stick to kind of drive teams to play in it, and having the two tiers, here's tier one, here's tier two, that would be really interesting. And I also think it would be really interesting to do the end of the season tournament, and obviously they have to make it so that the teams that are at the bottom don't just be like, okay, well, this is just another game, we're going to lose it. So, you know, I think somehow dangling a lottery pick or dangling, you know, okay, if you are the, like, one of the worst teams or whatever, but you still win this tournament, or you the higher you end up, the higher your pick is. And it's because obviously the status quo isn't going to, you know, fix the tanking issue. I think they need to do something different because how many times is Phoenix or the Knicks going to have a top five pick and they're just going to keep blowing it? Or it's not fixing the team. And obviously Phoenix has played better this year, but I just definitely think they need to do something.
Can I answer that question quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot.
I just think they need to do something to fix it. That's what I think.
Okay. So I have two things. One, I'm out on the midseason tournament. I just don't see how you motivate teams and individual players to play in that. Now, I know that Simmons mentioned that you give teams extra wins in the standings, but even now, like, teams are load managing guys in games that, you know,
can they do just a monetary thing? Like, would a monetary thing do?
No, they make too much money. Like, how much money would you have to pay out to the winners in order to get them motivated to play hard and compete for something that's meaningless? Like, there's no legacy. Like, if LeBron says, well, I was, you know, I'm a four-time MVP, a three-time finals MVP, a three-time NBA champion, and I won four midseason tournaments. Like, who cares? I just don't think that there's never been anything like that in place in any American sport. Fans aren't going to care. The players aren't going to care. Nobody's been raised on it. I just don't know how you could incentivize players and teams to want to compete in a mid-season tournament.
What if you made it like the worst five players on every team had to play against each other? Can we do that?
I mean, then it just becomes a clown show. Then it's not even, you know, then it's not even a game. And so money's not going to motivate anybody because the biggest stars have more money already than they know what to do with. And so that's not going to motivate them. You could say you're going to try to motivate the teams with a draft pick, but if I'm player number 9 on the San Antonio Spurs, what do I care if the Spurs get an extra draft pick? It's just another guy they're going to bring in to take my job. That doesn't motivate me. To me, the mid-season thing, I just don't see how it works. I just don't see how you incentivize it to get people to be interested. I don't know how you get players and teams interested in it. And conversely, or along with that, I don't know how you get fans to be interested in it. Because whatever the result is, whether you give some phony prize, whether that's money or a draft pick or whatever, teams aren't going to care. Players aren't going to care. So I'm out on that. If they do that, they're going to have to come up with something super creative to blow me away that's going to make me think that that's going to be something that's going to be effective and is going to work and accomplish the goals that they want to accomplish. Now, on the other hand, I think the play-in tournament makes a lot of sense. And I don't know that you can ever fully eliminate the idea of a team tanking to improve their draft position. No matter what system you put in, there's always going to be incentives to be worse, or there's always going to be things that people aren't going to like about the system. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question with the postseason tournament is what structure makes the most sense, or which one would be the most interesting? So do you do the 7 plays 10, 8 plays 9, where you have four teams in each conference competing for two spots? Do you open it up to everybody?
I think it's everyone.
Do you open it up to seeds 7 through 15, where you have, you know, you have matchups where maybe the 7 seed, you know, the 7 seed gets a bye into the second round, and then 8 plays 15, 9 plays 14, and so on? Do you do it that way? Is it? It's all got to be one and done, though, right? It's got to be NCAA tournament style.
Oh, I think it's one and
style.
Done thing. I definitely think it's a one and done thing.
I mean, the one and done thing is interesting because the NBA doesn't, you know, that's not typically the traditional way that the NBA playoffs go. So to see a one and done game, I think would be fun.
I think they should set it up like March Madness. I genuinely think they you might have to give a team a bye, but you play two games at one site, a neutral site. You play two games at one site back to back, and then the next day the two teams that won that game play, and then you give them a day off or whatever. But I think you structure it like March Madness. I think that would be super cool to have them play on a neutral site. Like, for example.
Okay, so here's my question. Do you think at a neutral site, do you think you would fill a 20,000-seat arena in some random city?
Well, I'm not saying a random city. This is a perfect test case to say, hey, Seattle, you want to have an NBA team? Show us that you want to have an NBA team and fill the stadium. Or, you know, I don't know. I'm this is an idea. I don't know.
I'm playing devil's advocate there. I don't know that I'd rather have it in somebody's arena, personally. The neutral site. I went to a neutral site World Series Game 7, and I didn't really enjoy that game. From a crowd standpoint.
Yeah, I know.
I was just
an idea. I think.
No, look, it's. I mean, I get it. For me personally, I would rather see it in somebody's arena. So
what if you have like the Eastern Conference teams? You have Eastern Conference teams go play in a Western Conference, and a Western Conference teams play in Eastern Conference, or something like that, to mix it up.
I don't know. Do people care? Are there enough fans that would care? So if you had in Cleveland, if you hosted the Western Conference play-in tournament,
well, I think they would pick like New York and L.A. That's where my headspace would be. If you're doing that, you're going to play the Western Conference in New York, and you're going to play the Eastern Conference in L.A.
It's always going to be in those two cities?
No, you could pick other big cities. You could pick Miami. You could pick Atlanta.
All right, I don't know. You're
not going to pick Cleveland.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Do the Cavs want that? Do cities start getting mad that, hey, how come we don't get to get that extra, you know, revenue?
Listen, and I'm just throwing ideas out there, Mike. Okay.
I know. Look, I'm just trying to poke holes in them. That's all. Look, here's what I like about the end of the season tournament. I like it being one and done. Personally, I would like where whatever the draft order is, the draft order stays based on the regular season. Like, I wouldn't change the draft order. So let's say that we'll go with the standings as they are now in the West. Oklahoma City's the 7th seed. So Oklahoma City stays at that 7th spot. You know what I mean? Like they're already locked in. They're locked in on that slot, whatever that means. Golden State's the worst. They're locked in on that slot, so they don't get penalized if they go on a run and somehow make it into the playoffs. And you know, when you do that, I guess then you're not really eliminating tanking, other than a team might still want to be trying to play at their best so they could qualify and make it into the playoffs.
What if you did this, Mike? What if the team that wins the end of season tournament and makes it to the things, they get whatever, you know, I don't know how many lottery picks are there? Technically 13.
Right.
You add a 14th pick, and whoever wins the tournament gets that pick. So theoretically, a team that's in the bottom of the tanker, okay, and they get, like, so whatever reason, they get, like, the 5th worst record, but they somehow got the 4th pick. They could end up with 2 lottery picks and have a 4th pick and the 13th pick in the draft. What do you think about that?
I like that. I would be fine with that. I think if you added that supplemental pick where you're not, you know, you're not moving people around in the draft order that they've gotten to all season, I think if you just say, okay, you're going to get the whatever, the supplemental pick for the end of the season tournament is always going to be pick number 11. So you're going to pick right outside the top 10. I think that the opportunity to make the playoffs, I think that incentivizes both groups. Then there's an incentive for the players, which to try to get into the playoffs, and you know they're not hurting their draft stock. And then you, from a team standpoint, an organizational standpoint, you know that if you're if your team wins that tournament, then they get that extra draft pick.
I'm just glad you liked one of my ideas.
I like the draft pick. I like the draft pick idea. You know, you'd have to. So if you here's the question though. Let's say if you let everybody in, right? So there's that means you're letting in how many teams? 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. It's nine teams if you're taking seeds 7 through 15.
Yep.
So you got, if you're gonna get two of those teams in, the two teams that make the finals of the tournament are both already in the playoffs, then those two teams are basically playing for seeding and they're playing for that draft pick.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I mean, there's always things like you wonder, like, okay, so, you know, I mean, typically, obviously, you'd want to avoid the number one seed, but maybe there's some kind of matchup or there's some year where the two top teams are even and one team's like, oh, well, we don't want to win this game. We'd rather play the number one seed because, you know, they just had one of their players get injured or who knows. I guess what I'm saying is there's, no matter what you do, there's always going to be problems. I like having everybody in it. I like having seeds 7 through 15 in it as opposed to doing the 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9 thing. And I think the extra draft pick as compensation that is sort of a supplemental pick, I think that's a solid idea. To me, the attraction in it would be the one and done. That's what would be exciting, just to see NBA games, NBA playoffs where it's one and done and you see what happens from there. So keep the postseason idea. Let's figure that out, NBA. I would give up on the midseason tournament. To me, that's kind of like the NBA awards show. They'd have to do a heck of a lot in order to entice me to watch that thing. I don't think I would really. It would take a long time for me to care about that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, to me, it would be meaningless.
I see your points, and I believe that they're fair. So I'm not gonna quibble or argue with you.
But I also get what the NBA is trying to do. If they did come up with something that was fun and entertaining and good, all right, I get it. But I just don't see the path to making that happen because I don't see how you make people care about something that isn't going to have any real meaning or consequence for them. So
sounds good.
All right, now that we solved all the NBA's problems,
I think we're done. That's what I think.
I think we're done. All right, to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the HoopHeads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.